Hello and welcome to the podcast Sport and Life. We'll get to the show in just a second, but first a word to the sponsors. Chief sponsors, been with us a number of years now. Big thank you to Bang Olufsen Cheltenham and Serene AV, specialists in some of the finest home entertainment brands, providing solutions based around high quality customer service and installations. Look up Serene AV online or head to Jason Briggs's beautiful Cheltenham store, the courtyard there in the Montpellier area of the town. If you're looking to optimize your immunity, remember the podcast has a long-standing relationship with Cytoplan's food-based supplements. I've been taking them for 20 years under the stewardship of my father, Dr. Mark Draper, more than 20 years now. And with the podcast, you get 30% off your first purchase, 10% ongoing with the discount code. And this is a new code, by the way, Draper10X. So my last name, Draper, all capital letters, the numbers 10 and the capital letter X. That's at cytoplan.co.uk at checkout. cytoplan.co.uk. Now, numerous factors can hinder your athletic potential. However, what if I told you your fitness of your 100 trillion cells might be the problem? Well, Cell Nutrition Sport are the only company that works on fitness at a deep cellular level and have developed a protocol called Cellular Fitness, consisting of everything your cell needs to be fit. The protocol is 100% natural, harvested from the ocean, not manufactured in a lab or a warehouse. The Cellular Fitness Protocol is made up of Hydrate 78, which is from marine plasma, providing 78 plus electrolytes and trace elements that your body needs in ionic form. Hydrate 78 provides complete recovery, eradicate cramps, and enhances your stamina, while Hydrate 78 Night allows you to remineralize while you sleep, giving a higher rate of deeper sleep, which results in complete repair and stronger immunity. I've been taking this for a couple of months now and found a real boost of not only my workouts, but just general well-being and feelings of hydration and fitness. But find out more at cellularfitness.world and you can use the code TED10, T-E-D, all capital letters, numbers 10 for 10% off your entire basket. Well, thanks for listening to all that. Onwards and upwards with the show. Tom, good morning. How are you feeling?
I am feeling absolutely wonderful. Thank you, Teddy. It's been work this week's been good. Back to normal on Good Morning Sports Fans rather than all the transfer shows as we were talking about last week.
Good.
And there's been loads of midweek football to keep me entertained and looking forward to the weekend.
Yeah, that promotion race is hotting up in the Championship, isn't it? Sunderland, what, just outside at the moment? Is it a point or two off?
No, we've slipped down to 10th. Yeah, so when I said that it was good to have midweek football, it wasn't good for Sunderland because we lost 1-0 away at Huddersfield, who were hovering above the relegation zone, and they very much deservedly beat us as well. But I'm going to Birmingham tomorrow, so Birmingham away tomorrow. Always enjoying away day, and I've not been for a month. I've missed the last four games.
Okay,
and I don't normally have as long as that in between games. So Birmingham away tomorrow. And this afternoon, Teddy, you'd love it. I tell you what, you'll be wishing you weren't working this afternoon.
I already am.
I miss it. Well, yeah, true. I'm meeting up with Michael Bridge and Pete Graves, who've both been on our show, on our podcast. Chris Boyd and Clinton Morrison's threatening to come as well for a little afternoon in Richmond by the river for a few drinks.
Beautiful. And the sun's out, is it? The sun's out here in Cheltenham. I'm guessing it is there as well, probably.
Well, it was 14 degrees yesterday. So if we've got that again, I'll be very happy.
Like Marbella. Has Emmy been on half term this week?
Yeah, so that's been the best thing about it, because half term fell on a week where he's with me.
Sweet.
So, although it's rained a bit, there's always been plenty of time to get out and play football in the garden, which right now, that's all he wants to do. And it's heaven as you can imagine, that's just heaven. Because it's not like, sometimes looking after children can be quite difficult. Not when all they want to do is play football. That's not difficult at all. That's great fun.
Yeah, I've tried my best to get him with Zoe. She likes putting the Man United kit on or the Cheltenham Town kit on, but once she gets out there, she'll kick the ball once and then go back upstairs, which is frustrating because she's actually got real potential. We were down in Wales this week, waterfall country. So if anyone wants to check that out, it's pretty awesome, actually. It's between Neath and Merthyr Tydfil. And we saw probably, I think, a 30 or 40-foot waterfall that we walked about an hour to get there in the streaming rain. But really special week. Although I would say to anyone, if you go to Neath, the Welsh name for Neath is Castell Ned, because I had it in my head being half Welsh that I thought Castell was castle, which it is. But I was driving around Neath on the ring road for about an hour looking for a castle, and apparently there's not one there anymore. It's just the Welsh name for Neath. So my wife and daughter were like, oh, what is going on? But it was a good week,
nonetheless. I know that some parents dread half term. Maybe that's because they've got like 2, 3, or 4 kids and it's quite difficult. But yeah, for me, when it falls on a week with me for his half term, I'm always absolutely delighted. Lots to do. Sounds fast in Wales. Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah, we had a great week. Zoe wanted to see waterfalls. She suggested New Zealand, but we thought, yeah, cheaper and logistically a bit easier at half term to go to Wales. So, yeah, maybe New Zealand's one for the future. Yeah, she had a good week. She had a really bad cough, but she's soldiered on. So Man United top five. This was really tough for me. If you enjoyed this one, Tom, putting it together.
Yeah, well, the thing is that we've done my top five Sunderland, we've done Pete's top five Newcastle, Bridgie's top five Tottenham, but we've not done yours. You know, Manchester United, of course, arguably the biggest club in the world, certainly one of the biggest clubs in the world. It was time to do this one, so I guess maybe I should take the lead here and be asking you questions.
Should we quickly rattle out the scenarios I put out there for people and see what you've put on that?
And the quiz question.
The quiz question as well, yep. So we've got other people's top five Man United, including Hayley McQueen, Sky Sports presenter and daughter of the late, great Gordon McQueen, Manchester United player as well. So the question for the scenario, Man United football-related one, whipped cross from the right-hand side, ball headed in by a stooping header, ball bounces once and in at the near post into the goal. Who do you see with the cross and the header? Tom, did one come straight to mind for you? Got a couple of great suggestions beneath it.
Yeah. So the cross from the right and the header in the area.
Yeah. It was kind of like probably 6 yards out, I think, maybe. Yeah. Yeah.
The issue I had with this one, because were you doing it specifically as Manchester United?
I was, yeah, but you could have it if it's someone else that came to mind.
No, because specifically Manchester United, it's Beckham to Van Nistelrooy.
Okay, yep.
But for some reason, and it really annoys me that I see this, right? But I see Keith Gillespie for Les Ferdinand, and it really annoys me as a Sunderland fan. That's what came to mind. Because Gillespie played for Newcastle, for Manchester United as well. I thought I'll say that one, but it's across from the right-hand side for me, for Manchester United, has to be Beckham.
Yeah.
And I've gone Van Nistelrooy over several others that it could have been.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, well, I think the only winger else it could have been at United probably was either Gillespie for a short time in his era or Kanchelskis. But I think with the type of cross was David Beckham. And for me, it was Dwight York, probably in the 99 season. York, Beckham to York, kind of just whipped into that 6 yard area. And actually, Dwight York was pretty good in the air, despite not being really good tall. It was good header of the ball. So that's who I saw. John Bicknell had Beckham to Teddy, guessing Teddy Sheringham, Beckham and York Harvey. Matthew Ward, Beckham to Zlatan, the perfect combo. I think that's a hypothetical one because they might have played together at Milan, might they? Maybe for a little bit. I can't remember exactly when the overlap was.
But still, hey, listen, we're not strict with our rules on this one.
Yeah, Beckham to Rude. Yes, agree with you, Paul Roberts says. And Martin Godwin says, slightly off topic, but struggling not to see Diogo and Scott at Villa Park for this one. So the recent goal for Scott McTominay off the cross from Dallow. So that's interesting. Yeah.
Not bad. Good point.
Not bad shout.
Good, yeah. Enjoyed that football scenario. It was a good one. And what's
lovely
your quiz question?
Quiz question is a guess who won that we did earlier on Tom's specialty, but this is a Manchester United related one. This person is 60 years of age, to give you a historical context. So would have been playing sort of 30, 35 years ago in his pomp for Manchester United as well. But the clubs, Reading, Portsmouth, Nottingham Forest, Manchester United, Nottingham Forest, a loan spell at Swindon, Grimsby, Aldershot Town, and bringing it back to where I was staying near in Wales this week, Merthyr Tydfil at the very end of his career in the Welsh League. Got 26 caps for England, 4 goals. played for England B back in the day as well and managed Weymouth and Reading Town, but is better known post-career for being a postman and also, according to Wikipedia, lately working as a delivery man. So that is a guess who question. Don't give it away yet.
Clubs. Give me those clubs. No, the answer. Give me those clubs again.
Reading, Portsmouth, Nottingham Forest, Manchester United, Nottingham Forest. Yep. And it was, to give you the sense of what he won, this wasn't all at one club, but a great spell around 1990. So he won the League Cup in 89, won the FA Cup in 1990, won the Cup Winners' Cup, the European Cup Winners' Cup in 91, and the League Cup in 92, but not necessarily all of those trophies with the same club. So obviously you can figure out from where we're going there.
If I'm right, if I've got the answer right, that is a very hard question.
Yeah, I suppose.
I'm not expecting many people to get in touch and say, I got that right, because that is hard.
Another clue. He got the assist.
I might be wrong.
He got the assist in the 1990 FA Cup final replay when Lee Martin scored for Manchester United against Crystal Palace. That might jog some memories, but Man United fans might know of a certain vintage, but even people my age may not remember. Right, Tom, give us number one then. Kick us off for your top five Man United.
Hell, no, I think we've got to start with you. This is your club.
Oh, okay. This is really tough for me.
Club. Yeah, let's start with you.
I would preface this by saying I think the best player I've seen at Manchester United and maybe the most important aren't on my list, because this is kind of people that resonated with you as a kid growing up. So it was really difficult to do it. And I tried to cover the two big eras of success under Sir Alex Ferguson, if you like. But I'll go for number one. I'll go for Rio Gavin. This is sort of no particular order. So number five, maybe Rio Gavin Ferdinand. 312 league appearances for United, 7 Premier League goals, 81 appearances for England as well, 6 Premier League titles, won the Champions League in 2008, a couple of League Cups as well, came to the club 2002, won that first title in 2003, then had the fallow period. Well, I guess his partnership with Nemanja Vidic was key to sort of last success of the Sir Alex Ferguson era, winning those titles in 2007, 08, 09. Won the Champions League in 08, and then the titles in 2011 and 2013, ended up finishing his career the 2014-15 season at Queen's Park Rangers. Before that, played for West Ham and Leeds United. But just a class centre-half. We haven't mentioned him much, but I think we talk about ball-playing centre-halves now, don't we? But I think actually Ferdinand came through in an era when he was doing that, but also in a very physical era around the turn of the century, could defend really well, in addition to be able to bring the ball out. And I think that partnership was brilliant, kind of stopper sweeper partnership with Vidic. And Rio Ferdinand's my number one.
It's hard for a young centre-back to get that early recognition. They tend to get early recognition if they're scoring goals, because you see their name more often.
Mm.
It's like a striker or a winger, the more they score or the more kind of things they do that go on the highlights on Sky Sports News and Match of the Day, that's when people get to know them. With centre-backs, it takes them longer, because you've actually got to kind of see them for a full match and say, God, that centre-back's good, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, and it's if a centre-back is scoring goals, they get mentioned a lot, but they're not necessarily... Like David Wheater, when he first came through at Middlesbrough, was scoring loads of goals from centre-back. And I was like, God, this Wheater, he's a good player, isn't he? How do you know that? Because you've just seen him score goals. He's a centre-back, right?
Yeah.
Ferdinand. People knew it with Ferdinand. They knew straight away he wasn't like a centre-back playing at centre back. He was ahead of his time in that sense, not by being a genius or anything, just because that's the way he played. So calm on the ball, very, very quick without looking quick. He would kind of glide across to be in the right place at the right time without having to really make last ditch tackles, because he read the game so well. In that sense, I suppose he was a bit of a genius in the way that he read the game so well. But brilliant centre-back, classy centre-back, and also a leader.
Yeah, and a brilliant era for West Ham as well. You wonder, like, they won the Conference League last season, but how they went so long without a trophy when you think about the players that came through back end of the 90s when we were, you know, maybe a little bit older than us, but similar age, Joe Cole and Rio Ferdinand, Michael Carrick. There's a lot of
Glenn
players.
Glenn Johnson.
Yeah, Glenn Johnson, Paul Konchesky, I think, West Ham, yeah, at that time as well. So great, great bedrock of talent. But so Rio Ferdinand's my number five. If we do it that way around, Tom, who are you going for?
I'm going to go with someone who, one of quite, you know, we've had this discussion that Manchester United players very rarely played for Liverpool as well. But quite a lot have actually played for Manchester City and Manchester United,
Yeah.
including who I'm going for here. He had a great career. 123 appearances for Manchester United, which was more than any other club that he played for. But he also played in the Premier League with Everton, a loan spell at Manchester City, one appearance for Southampton, which I'd completely forgotten about, by the way. The second most appearance he made was for Rangers, where he had a spell up in the Scottish Premiership. A right winger. Can you picture him?
What is it for Man City and for Rangers?
And so, well, Manchester United, he made 123 appearances.
Yeah.
That's his, but he also had a loan spell at Manchester City, which was from Rangers. He had one appearance for Southampton, which had completely gone over my head. And he played for Everton.
So it's not Kanchelskis.
Yeah. Andrei Kanchelskis. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't know he'd been at Southampton. Yeah.
Yeah. I can't remember that. One appearance.
Yeah.
2002 to 2003 season before going to Al Hilal, Dynamo Moscow, and two clubs I've never heard of. And I'm definitely won't be able to pronounce them, so I'm not going to try. But I loved Andrei Kanchelskis because I loved those old school right wingers. I've already mentioned Keith Gillespie.
Yeah.
I like those wingers too. Right footers on the right, left footers on the left, chalk on their boots, stay on the touchline, look up, put a cross into the two strikers. There used to be two strikers and a left winger attacking as well and an attacking midfielder getting into the box. That's how it used to be back then. And I loved Kanchelskis. He was just a no-nonsense, what I would call proper winger. Brilliant for Manchester United, brilliant for Everton, and very successful 4 years at Rangers as well.
Yeah, so explosive. And I think he probably didn't do big weights in those days in terms of training, but just that upper body strength just blast past people and that foot speed. And scored a hat-trick against Manchester City in a Manchester derby in the, I think, 93-94 season in an epic. I think it was United scored five in that game and he was just electric. So yeah, when he left in 95, I think there was a lot of uncertainty, but fortunately, United didn't replace him with Darren Anderson, as it turned out, and David Beckham came to the fore. So that's brilliant. Tom, before we get on to our number twos, I have to say you're looking very good in your green and gold hoodie there. Just adjust it. And I've got my
Black
Boys
black
D-Rock
and gold
T-shirt on as well. Yeah.
Black and gold, yes. Yeah, so this is my D-Rock tracksuit top. I've got the full tracksuit, obviously. Great gear. Then I was wearing I've got a long sleeve black D-Rock polo. Which I was wearing on air on Sky Sports News the other day and got a lot of compliments. And I was able, Teddy, to say to them, those people who were complimenting me, I was saying, well, I'll tell you what, if you want some of this stuff, listen to our podcast, because when you do, you might get a little treat from D-Rock. What is that treat, Teddy?
The treat is, thanks to Rumney and his team, they've given us 35% off their wonderful athletic wear. So if you go to DRock, it's D-Rock, spelled ROCK.UK, or you could just Google DRock clothing, I suppose it will come up. At checkout, you get 35% off with the podcast code, which is SAL, all capital letters, and the numbers 35. So get stuck in. Yeah, I've got this lovely turquoise sports shirt. Love my tracksuit as well. I've been wearing it all week on half term, actually, kind of in the evenings to relax. Very comfortable, good fit. And would certainly recommend it. So D-Rock, get on board with that. And by the way, Tom, another bonus for the podcast. Had a long-standing relationship last year with Herring Shoes, who supply some fantastic footwear to a lot of the Sky Sports pundits, including Michael Dawson, former Tottenham and Hull defender. And they've always given us... They always give us 10% off. But actually, I've checked with Chris from Herring Shoes, and he says now it's 10% off all shoes, which includes, and this is a brilliant British company, handmade shoes since 1966. It includes now all the existing discounts. So there have been shoes that are up to 60% off up on their website to clear the season. And you can get another 10% with the code TED10 on there, TED, all capital letters, and the numbers 10. So big bonus from Herring Shoes as well. So thank you for them.
Fantastic. So 10% off an already existing discount is special, and 35% off a D-Rock too. That's magnificent. So a little treat for you all, especially this very, very few sales around at this time of year, you know?
True. So yeah, it's a lull.
But that now's the time to make the most of it to our
Definitely.
Magnificent listeners. Right. Who's your number two then, Teddy, for Manchester United?
Number two, most successful footballer ever, I think, but certainly in Manchester United, and had to have him in not only for the stats, 13 Premier League titles, 4 FA Cups, 4 League Cups, 2 Champions League winners, 162 assists in the Premier League, which is by far the most of any player to date. Cesc Fabregas is second in the list with 111. I think De Bruyne's got 106, so he'll probably at least get to second in the list, and depends how long he goes on. But top of that list, they're currently, and just for the magic of being a kid, being at Old Trafford, watching him run down the wing, is Ryan Giggs running down the wing is my number two, feared by the Blues, loved by the Reds, Ryan Giggs. And it was just, like I said, we talk about stats a lot in football. I think data's come into it a lot, and you know, with the transfer programs you do, but what you can't bottle up is the emotion, the intangibles, and just being, what, 10, 11, 12, watching Ryan Giggs, who was still a teenager, I think himself, slalom down the wing. You get this wave of excitement as a boy going up to watch him at Old Trafford. And it made you realize, I suppose, why you fall in love with football to a certain extent. And he had that license with Kanchelskis, with Lee Sharp, of being wingers where they could really dribble with the ball and go at players and could lose the ball. There was that kind of confidence given in them by Sir Alex Ferguson. But yeah, for me, Giggs, for spanning many eras and becoming a midfielder in the end as well, showing intelligence and getting the PFA Player of the Year award in 2009, when he would have been 35 and a half years old, is testament to his longevity as well. And he kind of, in a way, we talk about the flying winger developing and changing. He actually changed during that period as it went to 4-3-3 and became a midfielder. So Ryan Giggs is on my list.
Yeah, one of my favourite stories is when Sir Alex Ferguson tells a story about how he's talking to George Graham. George Graham was at Arsenal at the time. So Ryan Giggs hadn't played for Manchester United yet. He was very, very young. And then Sir Alex Ferguson was saying, George Graham, George, you've got to watch out for this boy. He's amazing. His name's Ryan Davies. Because remember, Ryan Giggs, when he was
Ryan Wilson.
Was it Wilson? Sorry. Mm. Wilson. Sorry.
His dad was Danny Wilson. He used to play for, I think, Ryan, rugby.
Sorry. Yep. Sorry, Wilson rather than Davies. So his name is Ryan Wilson. Oh, he's brilliant. Brilliant player. You watch out for him. And then, of course, this Ryan Wilson, kind of, no one's heard of Ryan Wilson, have they? So much so that I got his name wrong. And George Graham, a few years later, kind of says to Sir Alex Ferguson, you don't always get them right, do you, Sir Alex? Because whatever happened to this boy, Ryan Wilson? Sir Alex goes, and by this stage, Ryan Giggs is an established player, one of the best players in the world. And Sir Alex goes, oh, well, he changed his name. All right, what to? He's called Ryan Giggs now. I remember he says that George Graham just went, "What, you bugger?"
Brilliant. So yeah, and
I love that.
And when he was Ryan Wilson, he played for England schoolboys as well. I think he played up to under 16s for England. So, and then became Giggs and played for Wales, which I think at the time in the 90s, we were kind of looking for a left-sided player after John Barnes went, weren't we? So that would have been ideal, but not to be very proud Welshman. Tom, who's your number two?
Yeah, and he's of course managed Wales as well. Right, so I've decided to go for a goalkeeper, but I'm not going to go for Schmeichel just because I think that would be too obvious. I'm going to go with Edwin van der Sar. Because when he signed for Fulham, he was getting on a bit when he signed for Fulham. And it looked like, you know, he was going to be in the sort of twilight of his career at Fulham. He made 127 appearances for them. And Manchester United had been looking for a goalkeeper for quite some time. Like a Schmeichel replacement, they couldn't find one for years and years. And eventually they found one. He was doing so well for Fulham, they said, oh, you know what? Let's just get him, even if it's just for a couple of seasons. Well, he stayed there for 6 seasons and made 186 appearances for Manchester United. And even then, when he left, he got back into the Schmeichel scenario of how are we going to replace him. So Edwin van der Sar, because it was kind of against all the odds. He didn't seem like the goalkeeper that Manchester United wanted. He was kind of the right goalkeeper at the right time. And he was there for quite some time as well. So I've got Edwin van der Sar in there, just rather than going for Schmeichel because it's too obvious.
Yeah, no, I love that. Crucial save in the 2008 Champions League final as well, or in there, and when Terry slipped. And I think he's very different temperament to Schmeichel, wasn't it, in terms of succeeding with kind of more placid guy, but brilliant goalkeeper. And yeah, United, after Schmeichel left in 99, I think they tried to get Schmeichel back at one point, but obviously they signed Fabian Barthez instead, and Tim Howard, Mark Bosnich, Massimo Taibbi had a bit of a nightmare. There's loads of keepers they went for. Even Barthez was obviously a World Cup winner. They could have worked.
Barthez actually did well, but he wasn't as consistent, and they wanted They wanted that consistent goalkeeper that they had with Schmeichel, and they found it with Van der Sar, despite it looking like he was kind of in the last few years of his career, and he was it just turned out not to be the case. He was brilliant. Yeah.
Barthez, of course, was the early pioneer of the dribbling goalkeeper, which we see a lot in the Premier League now, but was kind of trying to dribble around people 20 years ago in that great left foot, in fairness.
That awful game he had against Arsenal, I remember, where it just all went wrong for him.
Yeah, poor old Wes Brown, I think, was surrounded by that at the time as well. Okay, my number three, I'm going to go for the record goal scorer for the club. I think in some ways we don't appreciate him necessarily for England or Manchester United, what he achieved, and indeed Everton, because when he exploded onto the scene back in 2002 with that wonderful goal against David Seaman, how he played at Euro 2004 at the age of 18 as well. We maybe expected him to be on a par with Cristiano Ronaldo and Messi, but obviously that's kind of generational. That's once in a lifetime, really, to have two of those players. But it is Wayne Rooney, 208 Premier League goals as well. I think he's third in the current standings behind Alan Shearer and Harry Kane. Got 103 Premier League goals as well for the club. Five Premier League titles, on the FA Cup, on the Champions League in 2008, three League Cups and the Europa League at the very end of his Manchester United stay in 2017. And I feel like Rooney probably would have scored more goals, actually, had he played selfishly as a striker, which we saw in the 2009-2010 season after Cristiano Ronaldo departed to Real Madrid. And he was electric, getting on loads of crosses from Antonio Valencia in particular. But he sacrificed himself a lot for the team, Tom, playing as a winger for stretches at Manchester United on the left wing, and was just a bullish, pacey, skillful, brilliant, powerful shot on both feet, and scored some wonderful goals, like the overhead kick against Manchester City, the halfway line effort against West Ham, and the brilliant volley against Newcastle to save just a few of them.
There were times where Wayne Rooney was the best player in the world. There were spells of form where he was, and it does show how unselfish he was. That he broke loads of records, right? But I think they could have been insurmountable records had he, as you said, just been a selfish striker. But he had so much to his game, I think, that he felt, and certainly managers thought, to get the best out of him, we need to do more than just let him score goals. He would purposely drop deep because he always wanted the ball, just like Gascoigne always wanted the ball. The best players do always want the ball, even if it's maybe not the right thing to do, to drop that deep. But he's played as an attacking midfielder. He's played as a defensive midfielder. That was to limited success as a defensive midfielder, I've got to say. He did play out wide as well. A real team player. And one of the best, if I think about the best players England have produced in my lifetime, straight away my mind goes to Paul Gascoigne.
Yeah.
But then after that, two more come into my mind. One of them's Wayne Rooney, and the other one is someone I'm going to have in my top five, so I won't mention it yet. But he's got to go down as one of the best. And he's sometimes you think, well, he's one of the best players, but he's not the best goal scorer. Well, he actually was, wasn't he? Now, yeah. Harry Kane only just beat his record. He was still still Manchester United's top.
He's still Manchester United's record goal scorer. Yeah, he surpassed to Bobby Charlton, didn't he? With an epic free kick, actually, from the left hand side. It was a great goal to do it. Yeah. So he was a great goal scorer and a scorer of great goals. I think it was Stoke, yeah.
And yeah, just a brilliant player. It's amazing that someone who is Manchester United's top scorer was for a few years England's top scorer. It's incredible that I'm saying that he was underrated.
I know.
You know, that makes no sense, does it? But I don't think he was appreciated as much as he should have been. And he did. He was captain of England for a while as well, wasn't he?
He was. And I think I think it was just unlucky timings with England, wasn't it? You know that the tournaments only come every 2 years, the World Cups every 4 years. It just felt like after Euro 2004, he was never in his best fitness or form at the time of a major tournament. Whereas some players just all goes right, synchronised. It's more like Darren Anderson always seemed to be injured in between and then right on form for England at the major tournaments. But it just didn't work out that way for Rooney, probably because he gave so much during the season, in fairness.
Yeah, well, you've gone for a striker as third. I'm going to go for a striker as well. And another one who he is underrated. He definitely is underrated because he only made 15 appearances for England, one goal. Despite the fact that his goal scoring record in the Premier League was, I mean, for Manchester United, it was almost 1-2.
Yeah.
Before that, Newcastle United, it wasn't that far off 1-1 when he was at Newcastle. And I'm talking about Andy Cole, of course. And I've read his book. His book, by the way, is fascinating, not just the football side of things, There's a lot in his book which is very, very, very interesting about his personal life as well and family life. But he mentions how for England, I think it was Glenn Hoddle who said, "Yeah, I can't pick Andy Cole because he needs 5 chances to score, and you're not going to get that at international level." And then he actually reels off his stats about how many chances he needs to score a goal, and it was better than anybody else in like anyone else around at the time, and most people in history. So it just was, and that quote from Hoddle really, really upset him, and still upsets him to this day because it just wasn't true. And I know there were loads of top quality strikers at the time, but England played with 2 strikers, and he only got 15 caps. A lot of those were from the bench, which meant what he only scored 1 goal. But if you look at for Newcastle, I know that one of these seasons was in the or maybe 1.5 seasons was in the second tier. 55 goals in 70 games, amazing.
Amazing.
But Manchester United, 93 and 195, right? It's brilliant. Especially when there would have been a rotation system because you had him, York, Solskjaer, and Sheringham.
Yeah, he would have got pulled off a lot, wouldn't they, as well, and toward the second half of games.
Exactly. Then he went, he had 3 years at Blackburn and got 27 and 83, which is not bad at all. And he still did well at Fulham as he went that, 12 and 31, then 9 and 22 for Manchester City as he was getting on. And I just can't believe, I don't know anyone who puts him in their top, in their Premier League 11s. I don't know anyone who puts Andy Cole in there. But why not?
No, he got 34 goals in
I'm being
what?
a hypocrite because because as you know, my front two are Henry and Aguero. But still, like it's just it's amazing
Well,
that guy was goal scorer, a great goal scorer.
until Erling Haaland got the Premier League record 36 last season, he was joint with Shearer, wasn't he? 34, I think Cole got for the Newcastle would have been what, 93, 94 season. So
That would have
that
been
was.
the season they got, the first season in
Yeah.
their Premier League, wasn't it?
Yeah, he was absolutely electric with Peter Beardsley. Great partnership with Eric Cantona as well, and obviously Dwight York. And I think, yeah, it's interesting in terms of Manchester United legends that maybe he left a little bit early, but he would have been at United for what, 5, 6 years? And obviously culminating in the treble of 99. And I think the 15 caps does say something about that narrative about Andy Cole missing chances. Remember Alan Green, great Radio 5 commentator. But I remember him vividly as a Man United fan. I was listening in the car, and it was a chance for Man United, and it was like, oh, Cole's just missed the target, and it afterwards was, and that's why he can never play for England because he misses all these chances. And I thought that was actually what you say, Glenn Hoddle kind of ignited a narrative that wasn't true. And maybe it also said a lot about him only getting 15 caps, the amount of strikers back there. Because I know Arsene Wenger recently has got this job for FIFA saying we haven't got many strikers worldwide, we're a real shortage. But that time for England, as we've talked about in the past, it was ridiculous options. But I do think he should have had more than 15 caps.
Yeah, definitely. And like I say, remember, we always played with 2 strikers then as well. Always played with 2 strikers. And I don't really know what the issue there, but he's definitely in my top five. And I've been lucky enough to be in his company at work and work events a few times. And he's a really good guy, someone you can have a real he's not like the life and soul of the party, like a lot of people are, but he's someone who's a lot more quiet and you can have a really good chat with him. I've gone into detail on things in his book that have been fascinating for me, and he's been happy to talk about it with me for a long time. And a really good guy, and still loves Manchester United, by the way.
Yeah, proper legend. And we should say, despite the goal scoring record at Man United, really adapted his game, became an all-round footballer as well. I think different to how he was at Newcastle. Great playmaker and interchanging position. Some wonderful assists for Dwight York in particular. Talking of assists, I'm going to go with a man who between April 1995, when he made his Premier League debut, and when he left the club in May 2003, had more assists than anyone else in that period in the Premier League. Had 80 assists in what was probably about 6 or 7 full seasons. Dennis Bergkamp, sorry, had 74, and 68 was Gianfranco Zola. But top of the list was David Beckham, scored 62 Premier League goals in 265 appearances for the club, 6 Premier League titles, the treble in 99 as well, and still, just about at the time of recording, holds the Premier League free kick record with 18. James Ward-Prowse better get a move on at West Ham. We know he'll probably do that very soon. But yeah, I think in terms of the sheer stats: 718 career appearances, 117 goals, 214 assists. I think the volume of combined goals and assists, I think, puts him up there in the top bracket, and just was a real talent. And I think, Tom, sometimes people say, oh, he was hyped and actually it was about being famous. But I think some ways we overlook his talent because of the fame and the celebrity, which obviously served him well now as he owns Inter Miami and does all his business stuff. But for me, David Beckham was just very industrious, fantastic player who showed up in the big games, had the two assists in the Champions League final in terms of corner kicks as well in 99, and just always seemed to deliver that regularity of service.
Yeah, and his work ethic can't be doubted as well. He really did get the best out of his career that he possibly could. He wasn't one of these who, full of talent and could have done better. He really did get the most out of his career. Captain England for a long time as well. The free kicks and all the set pieces, yeah, fair enough. That's amazing. But he had a great first touch, brilliant. He could see passes that other people couldn't, and can't teach that. That's genius. And he was always a good ambassador for the country as well. Good ambassador for England, good ambassador for Manchester United. Yes, I know he fell out with Sir Alex Ferguson. And I know that sometimes he came across as not academically that clever, like when he was asked. And by the way, I don't know if this, I mean, is this quote a genuine quote? Because it seemed to be to a newspaper, not on camera, when he was asked, when he was sent off in a game, and he said, would you call yourself a volatile player? And he said, well, I play on the right, but I'm also good in the centre, and I can also play on the left as well. So yeah, I would say I am. And obviously getting volatile and versatile. And
yeah.
But I think watching his documentary that came out as well, he seems like a good guy, but certainly a brilliant player as well. And he's one of these English players who tried new things. He went out to America. He played for AC Milan. He played for PSG.
Yep.
But of course, Real Madrid too. And remember, under Fabio Capello kind of binned him off, basically. And Real Madrid looked like they were going to lose the title to Barcelona. Capello, actually, fair play to him, said, okay, I'm going to bring Beckham back in. Beckham, brilliant. And they won La Liga that season, the season where he'd actually been told you're surplus to requirements. So he came back from that, which shows the great attitude we've been talking about.
Yeah, in terms of making it as a footballer as well, you always think, oh, I could have done it maybe if I'd had this break or scout had seen me. But actually, look at the work, and you watch the documentaries about David Beckham and the fact that he was taking corner kicks on full-size pitches at the eight or nine years of age. Obviously worked on that right foot to be able to deliver it. And he did a lot of cross-country running and Bobby Charlton soccer schools as well. He was there winning player of the week and doing all the juggling and stuff. There's footage of him meeting Sir Bobby Charlton from an early age. I think under the stewardship of his father, Ted, he went for it. And David Beckham makes my list. Tom, who's your number two, I guess, if we count down that way?
Yeah, well, this is just favourite rather than best.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm not having a top five without having Lee Sharp.
Yeah. I
loved Lee Sharp as a player. He was my favourite player outside of being a son. When I first got into football, as you know, my favourite players were Lineker and Gascoigne because of the World Cup, which World Cup 1990, which is where I got into football. And other than that, obviously, all of my favourite players were Sunderland players, apart from Lee Sharp. I loved him. Yeah. He was an excellent player. And he's someone you might think his career maybe could have been better. Okay, I think that's probably fair to say, because he did go downhill after Manchester United. But listening to him on podcasts, he had a lot of bad luck, a lot of injuries, a lot of managerial changes that hurt him, a lot of broken promises from managers as well. It wasn't all necessarily his fault. The party boy stuff was, I think he enjoyed partying. It wasn't that he was like, you know, he wasn't doing it every night or anything like that. He's quite kind of honest about it. He didn't think it was anything more than any of his teammates were doing. But because he was in the public eye for being so good looking, and he was on, you know, magazines were picking him up, and he was making money outside of Manchester United, which is what I don't think Sir Alex Ferguson liked that kind of thing. Like our old boss at Sky Sports News, he would not have wanted that kind of thing from us, would he? Like
No.
us
Oh,
talking.
I haven't been offered that many modeling gigs, unlikely,
Yeah, but
Sharp.
what's yeah, but he would be like, what's this D-Rock clothing? Why are you wearing why have
That's
you got a
true.
discount code for D-Rock? You know, that's the kind of thing that
Yeah.
our old
Controlling. More
sort of
controlling.
and that didn't go down with Sir Alex Ferguson, and eventually Lee Sharp left, but he was a brilliant player. He used to get in trouble for the celebrations that he used to do, that the Sharpie shuffle, or wasn't it? I think
He'd
someone
go to the
else
run over to the corner flag and start doing a kind of jig with the
do
corner
the
flag,
little
swinging his hips.
Sharpie shuffle, and he had one celebration with Paul Ince as well, which again didn't go down too well with Sir Alex Ferguson. But he's a very funny guy, and his podcast I've listened to, and I know that people who've been to some of his after dinner speaking that he does, very, very funny guy, great storyteller. And he was a really, really good player as well. And that's something that people forget. And he was a flying winger who ended up going to left back and playing a bit of time in central midfield as well. So he adapted his game. And Lee Sharp, yes, I think his career could have been better. In terms of England caps, it was only eight. And considering how much we needed left wingers at the time, that's a
It's
real shame.
amazing. Yeah.
But it wasn't all his fault, and still, for those early days in his career, I'm having him. I just brilliant. I'm having him in my top five. Not that he would be in many Manchester United fans wouldn't have him in their top five, but I do.
I think he's a fantastic player as a kid as well. Loved him, and they're interchanging in positions. Sometimes he'd play left, Giggs would play right, they'd switch over, then had Kanchelskis in the mix as well. And scored a hat trick against Arsenal in the Rumbelows Cup, the League Cup in 91. And that was a fantastic night. I think we scored six against Arsenal that night. And just remember him for being fun and full of life, and very envious of his good looks and everything like that at the time. But also his stories, like you say, I'd love to have been a fly on the wall when it was like a young Ryan Giggs went under his wing, didn't he? They went to a house party, and somehow in those days, Sir Alex Ferguson had got wind of it. Ferguson rocked up and told everyone in the party to go home. And they were just
Well,
sat, him and Giggs were sat on the couch or something, just looking terrified.
Lee Sharp's version of that story is very different.
Oh, is it?
So Lee Sharp, they were there was Lee Sharp, Giggs, and like two like youth players who were round at Lee Sharp's house. And by the way, if you listen to anything from Lee Sharp, there's some of the things Sir Alex Ferguson like asked him to do, it was quite kind of, he was a bit unfair with Lee Sharp a lot, like kind of saying, don't move your girlfriend up because you need to live where I tell you need to live, with who I tell you need to live. So he ended up breaking up with his girlfriend. So Lee Sharp was ended up having time on his hands. He didn't have a girlfriend. And then Sir Alex Ferguson was like, you need to settle down. You need to get a girlfriend. You need to get married. It's like, but I've just ended it with my girlfriend because you wouldn't let her move up, and that kind of thing, which actually still quite hurts him a little bit. But the story is, I don't think they were even going out, or they were going out for dinner or something. It was nothing bad. And so Alex Ferguson thought they were having a party, and there was one bottle of lager in the whole house. And Lee Sharp being like, oh, I'll have this one bottle then before we go out. And the bottle had fizzed up on his shirt. So he took his shirt off to put it in the wash. The doorbell rang. He answered the door with his top off. And it looked, I mean, so it looked like a bit of a sordid party when it wasn't at all. So different version of events from Sir Alex and Lee Sharp. But we could probably, I tell you what, I'd love to get Lee Sharp on this podcast because he's a great storyteller, but also very honest about how he didn't always have it easy.
No, that'll be good to hear. And also, I think that his mum organising his fan club was pretty epic as well. And they'd bring like meet and greets to Manchester nightclubs. His mum would organise buses. And that was a really cool story. I'd love to hear more about that. But Tom.
You must remind me maybe next week or next time we can possibly bring Lee Sharp into this, or Paul Ince. Lee Sharp has got this amazing story about Paul Ince. I must re-listen. I must re-listen to the story to make sure I get it right.
Brilliant. We'll do that for sure. Okay, number one. This is one that, again, maybe someone would say wasn't the best player or most electric player in terms of records or stats, but this is someone as a little boy. I go up to Old Trafford and I just watch him warm up. I love the way he controlled the ball. He pinged it across the pitch in the warm-ups, full of fire and brimstone on the pitch. And I think we talked about that, like having that respect for the so-called hard men in the game. And I suppose typified one game was against Sheffield United in the FA Cup in the, I think, 92-93 season or 93-94. And he'd done this wonderful 1-2 move across the pitch. And it'd been a long team move, ended up scoring the winning goal, then got sent off for kicking someone up the backside moments later. And it was in the green and gold kit at the time, the famous Newton Heath testimonial kit. And it is the one and only, and he doesn't look like Elsa from Home and Away, despite what my best mates used to say at the time as kids. It is the one and only Leslie Mark Hughes, who, as a lot of people know, is often the solution to my scenarios. But he is, yeah, a great goal, a great scorer of great goals. Played at United, Barcelona, Bayern Munich, back to United, then Chelsea, went on in his 30s to have great success there. Played for Southampton, and I think for a while was one of the oldest scorers in the Premier League, playing for Blackburn up until 2002. Had a wonderful career. Again, he changed positions. He started in midfield, went to a striker, wonderful control on the chest, the thighs, great volley of the ball. Think about the Oldham goal in the 94 FA Cup semi-final, saving United with that wonderful stretch volley into the corner. And for me, yeah, Sparky Hughes has to be top of my list. It's funny, isn't it? Just like we say, it's not the best players necessarily. It's the ones that really stick with you.
Well, I was surprised. I knew you'd have Mark Hughes in your top five because I know you love him. But I'm surprised you've gone for him for number one. And I assumed that I wouldn't have to say anything about my number one because I thought it was going to be your number one.
Oh.
I was going to let you do everything.
Do you think it's Cantona?
No.
Keane?
No.
Whoa, that's interesting. Schmeichel? No, you said Schmeichel already.
No, I didn't. Actually, I had Van der Sar instead of Schmeichel.
Van Nistelrooy?
No.
Cristiano Ronaldo?
Can't believe this, no.
Not Cristiano Ronaldo, not Cantona, not Roy Keane.
No.
You're not doing Gary Neville. You're not going to say Gary Neville, are you, for Sky Sports points?
No, I cannot believe. I was adamant that I don't need to do anything, say anything about this guy because Teddy will have him at number one.
So that's really interesting.
I'm flabbergasted. You haven't even
Steve Bruce. Steve Bruce.
No. Although he was very good, but not
what
number
position,
one.
What position does this player play?
Central midfield, but then criminally used on the left wing under Sven-Göran
Eriksson. Paul Scholes. Of course, Paul Scholes. Yeah.
Paul Scholes.
I think Paul Scholes. I would say Paul Scholes and Roy Keane were the best Man United players, probably, in terms of all-round
when I said, talent. So when I said that, when I think of the best players England have produced in terms of magicians, and I said Gascoigne, Rooney, and one other who's definitely going to be mentioned, my other one was Paul Scholes. For a little while, I would actually add Joe Cole to that as well, but that's for a different day. Paul Scholes, I mean, it comes to something that even in training, whoever's team Paul Scholes was on would win in training, apparently.
Yeah.
Is that who was it who was asked, again, this is one of those who you don't know if it's a genuine quote. Who was asked,
David.
What's it like being the best
midfielder in Europe?
Something? I don't know, ask Paul Scholes.
It was attributed to Edgar Davids, wasn't it? I think, yeah.
Also, like, I don't really do my top five, really. I try to think outside the box, like Lee Sharp. But, like, I haven't gone Keane or Cantona.
No.
Because they're very obvious. And we've talked about them on a lot of podcasts in the past. So I've left them out. Van Nistelrooy and stuff like that. I wanted Andy Cole rather than him. I wanted Van der Sar rather than Schmeichel because they're too obvious. I knew that you would have Giggs. But I actually just thought we would both have Scholes because he deserves that. And I wish his international career wasn't cut short, although it was his own decision. Sunderland tried to sign him. In the Premier Passions documentary back in the 1996-97 season under Peter Reid, in a board meeting, Bob Murray says that on deadline day, they tried to sign Paul Scholes. But that was going to be as a striker, by the way, because that's where he was. He just adapted his game to be an attacking midfielder. And, I mean, his passing was amazing. His shooting was amazing. His tackling wasn't, admittedly. but he's... just loved him. I think
he's a class player. Yeah, I think
so
you're right.
Quiet
He's
as
got
well.
it's hard not to put. Yeah, it's that kind of personal top five. But he has a wonderful talent, as you say. I think reason Mark Hughes left the club partly in '95 was that Sir Alex Ferguson saw Scholes as that second striker, and maybe Andy Cole as the main striker would replace Cantona and Hughes eventually. But then obviously the situation devolved. Sheringham came in, Scholes dropped into midfield, and Dwight York came to the club as well, and had ended up with Solskjaer, a brilliant kind of quartet of strikers, and Scholes that attacking midfielder, and then he became the game controller, and almost, I think, even better than someone like Pirlo, which is amazing to say, at controlling a game when you watched it live was phenomenal. Tom, what are top five? Should you run through some other people's? Hayley McQueen, as we say, Sky Sports News colleague and of daughter of Gordon McQueen, former Manchester United defender, late great player. She says, mine is more favourites rather than just top five. Beckham, Schmeichel, Ronaldo, Rooney and Vidic. And I suppose that's the thing, is we don't mention Cristiano Ronaldo much, but I guess partly it's because he's had such a well-travelled career and you associate him, I'd say, as much with Real Madrid as anywhere now.
Yeah, true. Yeah, I'd say that. I would say that about Ronaldo. There's so many players that we could have had in, but again, like Hayley, I've kind of mixed it up with a more with favourites as well, because neither of us went for Vidic. And I know you went for Ferdinand. Could have easily had Vidic. Could have easily had Bruce in the top five. I laughed at number one, obviously, when you said number one. Top five. And Gary Pallister as well. There's Dennis Irwin. I know you love Dennis Irwin.
Yeah, it's true. Class player. Paul Roberts says Eric, Scholesy, Ronaldo, Rooney and Keane. I think Eric Cantona as well, people will say, because of the fact he was a catalyst to winning that first title. We don't know what would have happened. Would have they have won the 13 titles under Sir Alex Ferguson had they not got Cantona? Shane Burke has Cantona, Scholes, Keane, Vidic and Ruud van Nistelrooy. What wonderful striker Van Nistelrooy was. I think just maybe the wrong time at United in terms of winning lots of trophies. John Bicknell, maybe a little bit older. Brian Robson, we grew up. Brian Robson went home from Italia 90, didn't he? Which is usually our first reference point. Nearly 33 years of age, wasn't in his prime, but people
he didn't
who
go
watched him
home.
Said,
he got injured. But he didn't go home.
Oh, no, that's true.
So
yeah,
Bobby
he got
kept...
injured. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah.
Jake French, Schmeichel, Irwin, Giggs, Ronaldo, Cantona. It's a brilliant five, actually. And then Irish Overseas One has Keane, Rooney, Ronaldo, Scholes, and Giggs. So it's brilliant. Yeah. Lots of different fives, variations.
Yeah, great fun. No, it's a good one for Manchester United, because they're such a big club that you don't have to be a Manchester United fan to get involved. Everyone can have their top five.
Yeah.
When it comes to them, it's been a good subject.
Enjoyed it. Enjoyed it. Let's round it up with the answer to the quiz question. Remind you, 60-year-old, played for Reading, Portsmouth, Nottingham Forest, Manchester United, Nottingham Forest, Swindon on loan, Grimsby, Aldershot Town and Merthyr Tydfil. Won the League Cup in 89, the FA Cup in 1990, assist for the winning goal in the replay in 90, won the Cup Winners' Cup with Man United, the European Cup Winners' Cup in 91 and the League Cup in 92. Tom, have you got this one? Postman?
By the way, I'm almost certain I'm right, okay?
Yeah.
Whether I'm right or not, if anybody got this who's listening, I genuinely want to hear from you, and I want you to be honest and tell me if you got this, because that's hard. We are experts in our field, all right? So we really should be getting a question like this. But if anyone else has got it, you need a job in...
Yeah. I think
in football,
you
kind
of have to. You have to be our age as well, don't you? Because it's a sort of age when you remember things. Yeah,
I believe the answer was Neil Webb.
It is Neil Webb, that raking pass to Lee Martin in the FA Cup replay in 1990. 26 caps for England. I don't think got any after sort of early 90s for England as they changed.
I think he went to the 1990. Well, I know. I don't know if he.
Yeah,
went
I think he did
to
go
the
to 90
World Cup, but he was in my Esso coin collection.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think he might. I think in my head, I can see him maybe in that some of the squad footage, but I don't know if I made that up. But yeah, Neil Webb, I guess he would have left in 92 to go back to Forest, maybe for Sir Alex Ferguson. Thought Darren Ferguson was going to come to the fore as well for United at that time. His son.
Yeah, potentially. But I remember Neil Webb from the early days. But I tell you what, if anyone else got that, I really do want to hear from you, because I just want to give you a well done, because that is hard.
We'll do an easier one next time, I promise. Tom, brilliant to see you. I will speak later. I'll see you on Sunday for Soccer Sunday.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. See you then.